listening to the Youth Creek Podcast on KHC Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHC Network. And now for the podcast.
See it once, but that will be enough. Friday, the 13th.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospective Podcast. I am your host, Gail Smith. We are now entering into the first part of the Friday the 13th retrospective series, where this is our Halloween theme special for the year. And joining me today is Gary Ivey.
Hello, hello.
And then Justin Mayhew.
Hi, everybody.
So getting things started, I'm going to start with Justin. What is your take on Jason Voorhees?
Jason Voorhees, he's that silent, you know, cipher. He's basically death. You know, it's pretty simple and straightforward. And, you know, as far as those 80s slasher guys go, he's, you know, somewhere in the middle. You know, I think he's, you know, more interesting than Michael Myers, frankly. But, you know, Freddy's my favorite. Freddy's my boy, you know.
Well, he has the most character.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
And we will get to Freddy Krueger eventually.
What about Leprechaun?
Leprechaun, yes, fuck yes.
Leprechaun's just funny, though. He's just goofy.
He's got a good character.
Troll,
it's like,
too.
It's like if R.L. Stine wrote an actual scary movie.
You think?
Huh. That's how I take it. Is R.L. Stine does the children's horror thing, but Leprechaun's like if R.L. Stine just went crazy and said, I'm just going to write an R-rated kids movie.
I think we should do that.
But, yes, so, Gary, what's your take on Jason?
Jason is the man. He's one of the icons of the 80s. Like Justin said, super iconic. I would argue he's probably the most popular of the slasher.
No, I wouldn't argue that. I just say my
personal favorite. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, he's out of the...
What do you think? Do you think Jason or Freddy is more in the pop culture zeitgeist?
I think Jason, but because of the hockey mask, like it's a more simple design. It's more
super
simple to grasp.
Iconic.
Yep. Yes.
And I think actually even Michael Myers might be even more iconic than Freddy overall.
Yeah.
And know, I heard of as a kid Jason more than Freddy or Michael and Leprechaun. I didn't know Leprechaun existed until I was a teenager. I knew of Freddy, Michael, and Jason as a kid. Mm-hmm. So. Well, we also have to give love to Jaws, the shark. We have to give, you know, he's a very iconic character. Yep. He spanned the 70s and 80s, even though the 80s were not good to him. 80s were not good to him at all. But anyway, he's an iconic character, and I think he is more iconic than Freddy because it's just a more simple design, and there's not just that much going on. And
but,
not
his movies aren't as good.
Right. But I think it's the iconography of Jason.
And quite frankly, you know, having to come up with jokes for Freddy every movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it gets, you know, the writers, it gets some writing fatigue.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much Jason, he just runs after kids. It's pretty simple writing.
Oh, he's basically a ripoff of Michael Myers.
Yes.
I mean, even Cunningham will tell you that.
And and that's how it was invented. I mean, that's how the first one was made. It was like Sean S. Cunningham had made a few like kids movies or family pictures.
Well, he produced Wes Craven's stuff in the 70s.
Right. Yep. But I think he was trying to do a little bit more family fare in the late 70s, and he was just like, now let's go back to eight. Let's go back to horror. And he was looking at what was popular at the time, and Halloween had just hit, and it hit like. And even though Halloween wasn't a gangbusters hit at first, but it grew. Like it grew with word of mouth as it rolled out throughout the country.
A sleeper hit.
Yeah, it was a sleeper hit. So he looked at the movie and watched it numerous times and made notes and told his writer, Victor Miller, let's write something like this and get it out there as quickly as possible.
Didn't they, in fact, say, let's make it as much like Halloween without getting sued?
Yeah.
Right.
And you've got the name. I mean, the iconic name. And you take Halloween, what's another scary? Friday the 13th. There you go.
Yeah.
Not any scarier than Saturday the 14th, though.
Yeah, and even the early 80s, there was a lot of the, you know, holiday slasher films like Happy Birthday,
Black Christmas. Valentine's.
My Bloody Valentine,
yes.
There also was a Valentine's Day movie as well.
Yeah.
Graduation Day.
Yeah. All these, you know, pomp and circumstance days that we're going to ruin. Yes. I love
prom that. Prom night.
Now, that would be a prom I'd go to.
Run away.
Well, one thing about Friday the 13th is it was a studio movie as opposed to Halloween, which was an independent feature.
Yes.
Kind of had to travel around with it.
Yeah. Yeah, and Freddy was also originally, was New Line there?
New Line Cinema, which was an independent studio as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Paramount that came out with
Jason. They bought the rights hesitantly because Sean S. Cunningham kind of forced their hand.
Paramount Friday 13th. Buying Jason. Yeah.
I mean, New Line did find that was actually going to New Nightmare, or going back to Nightmare for a second. That was actually their first movie distributed and financed on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out well for them. But going back to Friday 13th, Sean S. Cunningham kind of made a campaign in the paper and said, this is what the movie's going to be, and this is what essentially kind of forcing Paramount to be like, just give them a few bucks to slap it together, even though there was no script at the time when this campaign was made, but they still made it work.
It could be argued there was no script at the end either, but
they didn't even have the ending written when they shot it, or when they were coming close to shooting it. I
mean, it's basically, you know, it's set up the murder, kill him, then set it up again, you know, repeat, you know.
It's one of those movies, and you just get a bunch of bodies together, and you drop to the floor every couple minutes.
You know, it's appealing to me as a would-be director or producer to do something like that because, you know, it would be easy.
Yeah,
you know?
It's pretty simple.
Comparatively straightforward, you know?
Oh, yeah, I mean...
I think that's one thing, though, that makes the Friday the 13th, they get a little monotonous.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of really... And that's what I kind of admire Cunningham for doing. It's like... doing all that effort in, or I guess little effort. But let's talk more about the first movie. So, first movie, Jason's not the killer. It's the old joke in Scream.
Yes. It's Pamela Voorhees.
Yeah.
Mrs. Voorhees. And I know the Christies.
And it's quite funny. My brother always goes, here's this, you know, 60-year-old asthmatic lady who can hardly run is going to kill all these teenagers.
Yeah, she chases down all these teenagers. But to be fair, almost you can make an argument that everyone just undermined her and she took them all by surprise.
You mean underestimated her?
Sure, yeah, underestimated. Okay. We'll say that. They all just kind of took her for granted, and they didn't really know what was happening. And when she finally breaks in front of Alice, that's when Alice goes, oh, shit, I gotta go run in the woods for 20 minutes and get away from this person.
Yes.
That's the thing also about Friday the 13th is going back to the first, not the first kill, but the kill where the cook gets killed, the girl that's been, we've been following for the last 20 minutes as she's trying to like hitchhike her way
to chef.
Crystal Lake.
Yeah, for the chef of the camp. Yeah.
You can tell it's a man that's stabbing her.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can just see the arm and you can see
you're ruining the magic.
I know, I mean, but still, it's just so obvious.
The beheading scene, wasn't that
it was not Cervini. It was not Cervini's hands. It was another person's.
It was another dude, though.
It's another dude with a hairy arm, hairy hands.
But it was not Pamela The actress, what's the actress's name that played Pamela? Anyway, but it wasn't her.
Betsy Palmer.
Betsy Palmer. It wasn't Betsy Palmer's arms in the last scene.
Yeah, and my thing about Friday the 13th is I don't think it's a good movie in general.
No, not a good movie, but an interesting movie.
It started a good franchise because I think we talked about this. The Friday the 13th kind of stands as a collective, not as where if you look at Halloween, it's like you got the first movie. And then you can skip the rest. Friday the 13th is kind of like a collective bunch.
You think about Freddy, and you think about Michael Myers. They had their iconic look from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know? And with Jason Voorhees, it's not even until the third movie that we get what we think of
as the iconography. Jason.
The William Shatner mask for Michael is in the first.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Freddy, of course, with his fedora and his... green and red.
Yeah, sweater. Someone can make an argument that Freddy's makeup evolves over time, but still, it's the same.
Yes, we get
look.
You get the idea from the first movie.
Yeah,
you know,
Freddy didn't go from a potato sack to.
Yes,
Freddy didn't go.
He didn't go from a woman to a potato sack to a.
Yeah, the first movie is not that good, and I don't think it's. And I think it's good, not good, because it just doesn't. A, it's not scary, and maybe. Like, I get it. 1980, this was scary, but I guess because I'm so desensitized.
Yeah, and jaded.
Jaded that...
Yeah, I think it's that there's so many apes and knockoffs of it that the effect is lost. You know, right. There's so many things that they did afterwards just ripping off the Halloween and Friday the 13th, you know?
Yeah. Well, another thing is, like, it's so well known. Like, I knew going into watching it for my first time that Jason's mom is the killer, not Jason.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking, you know, a 35-year-old, 40-year-old spoilers.
It's just so into the...
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, sorry.
No.
I was just saying, agreeing.
My final thought on the first one is I go to the ending, you know, that electro ballad on the lake with the fall foliage.
Very,
in the
like, Lucio Fulci, Dario
Argento. Very giallo-like film. You know, it's a gorgeous image of her floating...
That's my favorite scene.
Yeah,
in the movie.
It's a really gorgeous image.
It still doesn't make any sense, like why she would get on that boat.
It's gorgeous though.
My favorite scene is when the snake dies.
It's a pretty good scene. I hate that because I love snakes. I hate the idea of a death of a snake.
It's foreshadowing though.
It is.
It's real though. Real.
Yes. Yeah, I hate that mistreatment of a snake.
Animals were harmed during the making of that movie.
Yeah, snake.
No animals were harmed during the making of that movie.
No, Kevin Bacon was the iconic death scene in the film. You know, the hunting arrow through the throat.
it's the most complicated effect in the movie.
I heard that when Savini and his crew were making it, the hose had come off their squirt bag, so they were actually blowing the tube, and there's where the sputtering, which I think actually heightened it, is going through his trachea, for God's sake, you know?
Yeah.
So you have the sputtering, and it makes it much more gory.
So that was one of the first movies he did after Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
Because what was it, Dawn of the Dead, and then this?
He did
Maniac.
Maniac, what...
I mean, he did work in the late 70s, and I mean, he had done some stuff
beforehand.
It was early
in his career, yes.
Right. So, the ending of the first movie is Jason. It's revealed Jason comes out as like a 13-year-old boy, grabs her, and pulls her in the lake. And the ending, the iconic, and I think more iconic than the jump is, he's still there because it's ominous. It's it's frightening. This ghost is still attached to Crystal Lake and to anyone who's out there.
All these movies, the prankster characters, my God, there's some mean-ass, you know, assholes.
And we'll get to one in the third one.
Shelly.
Yeah, we'll get to Shelly in a bit.
But the first one, he's on the archery course, he's shooting arrows at a girl.
Yeah, that's pretty dangerous.
Man. Yeah.
I mean, and those are real arrows. They're not just going to, like, slightly poke the skin. Those are, like... The ones that'll fucking kill you.
He's like, you know, dude, I think you need to leave, okay?
Yeah. Yeah, this is like, that's pretty dangerous.
So anyway. Number two.
So according to timeline, according to my research, part two takes place 5 years after the fact of the first one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because, well, it's not mentioned in the movie if anyone pays attention. Like, you have to read the synopsis and the Wikipedia.
That's just after-the-fact thing that fans did to connect these.
Yeah, the retcon, it was a fan retcon.
Yeah.
But even that doesn't quite make sense because Jason still looks like he went from 13-year-old to, like, 20-something in, like, a matter of 5 years.
Well, nothing's going to make sense because directors to come in.
He was 13 years old when he died in 1958, 57.
But like, in the end, he still comes out.
In 1980, he's still a 13-year-old boy after 30 years.
But at the end of the first one, he still comes out like a 12, 13-year-old kid. Or the corpse of a 12, 13-year-old kid.
Yep.
So, but I mean, I guess you can buy that maybe a 17, 18-year-old would be that tall, but still. Anywho, so the first one opens and immediately has better filmmaking than anything in the first movie.
The second one opens.
Yeah, and it opens with a great tracking shot all through. We're following Alice as she's just going through her house, checking things, making her tea, petting your cat, talking to her mom.
On the phone, yes. Yeah. This is Wes Craven's Scream, you know, obviously the template for the opening.
Right.
Was it Drew Barrymore?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Scene?
Yeah.
And it's a really good opening, and because the opening leads in with Jason walking towards her house, you know Jason's somewhere around the corner, and you're just constantly waiting, and that tracking shot just keeps going and going and going. And even the music is a little like subtle, like it gets subtle as you know where Jason is if you're listening to it. So it just keeps building and building. And then when the phone hangs up and she's just getting her tea, then she opens the fridge and it's and then she
stabbed to the brain.
And great opening.
So I guess that means that Jason Voorhees was the ice pick killer from the mafia or something.
Yeah.
They hired him a lot. That's how he got big. They kept him fed. And then he took a break for Crystal Lake to visit his mom. And then that's how the second one happened.
Okay. We've just written kind of a whole new backstory for Jason Voorhees. Yep. Mob hitman.
Yep. Great. It's perfect. We'll put it in the sequel. Anyway, so I like the first movie a lot more. And also there's a great female character in Ginny.
You mean the second one?
Oh, wait, did I say the first one?
Yeah, you mean the second one.
Yeah, the second one. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think Friday the 13th Part 2 is a lot better.
I mean, the budget is so much bigger. You know, it's obviously
it's twice as much.
Yeah, they obviously, you know, actually made a film this time instead of, you know, the first was a lot of handheld, a lot of, looks like 16 millimeter, you know.
Mm-hmm. Look, it's very low budget. I mean, and that was the goal, but still.
Yep.
Still, but this one looks more cinematic. The cinematography's more wider. And the kills are a lot better. Like, especially, you know, we were doing kind of some pre-show work, and we were talking about, the kid in the wheelchair.
Mm-hmm.
And that death is so well done, not just from a makeup standpoint, but from a character's standpoint, how it's written.
Yeah, I mean, it's iconic for me. You know, they always talk about in the first one, Kevin Bacon's character being stabbed to the throat. In the second movie, the wheelchair. Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's to say. For me, the same kind of iconic nature to the wheelchair murder.
Yeah.
You know, that's the visual from the movie for me. You know,
That's definitely one of the best kills in the series. When you're talking about Friday the 13th, that's one you remember.
Yeah.
And then the other like iconic kill is after the kids, they get done making out, or they're just kind of laying on top of each other. Jason comes in and stabs him with like a harpoon.
It's a plastic spear.
Oh, okay.
it's the prop that the jokester had earlier when he was playing the caveman.
Oh, okay.
So it's actually he stabs him with a plastic spear.
Damn, they're so like you can put it. They must be made out of hot wax. That's the other iconic kill. And what's interesting about that kill is it was actually cut down dramatically because it was supposed to be like she was trying to get him. Like she was barely scraped, she was trying to get him off of her so she wouldn't like get stabbed more. But Jason was like, like getting through.
They had to cut a lot of things out of the Friday the 13th movies. You
know? Oh yeah, and that's gonna be the running theme in this series is that the MPAA will just like they hurt this franchise a lot, and we'll get to that in 7, like the one that was the most cut. So yeah, they cut a lot out because it's even in the back of the VHS like you know, there's a still of her, like, trying to get him off of her, or her off of him.
Yeah.
Whatever. And, and like, you see it, and it's so just frustrating. But the second part ends, and I know we're kind of going through this very quickly, but I promise we'll slow down in a couple minutes. But part two, it ends with Jenny, like, she's in the sweatshirt, because what we find out later in the movie is Jason Hatt has been keeping his mother's, you know, rotten head, I guess, in a freezer, because a corpse like that, or
5 years later,
a decomposing head would just be a skull at this point.
I think I lived in that trailer, I think, you know.
Oh, yeah. You were his roommate.
Yes, I must have been Jason's roommate. I lived in that trailer.
Yeah. Well, what I like about the second one is, if you didn't want to get killed by Jason, you just go out drinking for the night.
Yes. Yeah. Let's all go to the casino.
Don't worry about it. Half of the cast just goes out and drinks, and then everyone else, the wheelchair kid, the girl who arm wrestles.
Well, the wheelchair kid stayed behind because he thought he was going to get laid, right?
No, he made the excuse of nothing is a bigger party pooper than a wheelchair. Kid in a wheelchair.
There's some girl in there who likes him.
Oh, yeah, she comes on to him.
Yeah,
but that's afterwards. It's after they all disperse.
It's been a while.
Half of the cast disperses. But, yeah.
Then she goes, let's play strip hockey or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
On the little handheld.
And Muffin, don't forget Muffin.
Muffin! The survivor. The
true survivor of the Muffin. Story. She didn't have sex with anyone.
And apparently, Muffin had a twin, because they had the dead dog that even had the same bow.
Yeah.
Dead, you know, the mutilated corpse. So where'd Muffin 2 come from? Where's the Muffin cloning factory?
Yeah, there needs to be a series. Mm-hmm. Well, there is a Friday the 13th series. Never mind.
Yeah. Do an episode about the Muffin cloning factory.
Yeah, that would be a cool side story. Where did Muffin 2 come from?
Yes.
We must answer this question.
Well, I think when you have that big chase at the end, when Jason pops out through the window, that's one of the best scares in the film.
That's my favorite scare. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite scares of the whole franchise, is she's trying to hold the door because she thinks that Jason's going to pop through the door. But she tries to reach out, and then Jason comes through the window. That's where we start to see that's his thing. He likes breaking windows.
Yep. Well, I mean, he throws something or somebody through a window in every single movie, doesn't he?
Yeah. You know? It's sort of his thing.
Yeah. Yes. Essentially, yeah. I don't know if he did that in 8, but yeah, that's his thing.
I mean, all the first three, you know, somebody gets thrown through a window.
Well, in 8, he punched that guy's head into the trash can.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right. But I don't know about him going through a window. Anyway.
Not enough windows on boats.
True.
A porthole. Try squeezing the guy through that damn porthole.
Well, he kills that guy with the guitar in the 8th one.
Right. Oh, wait. He did break a window. He broke a porthole to get to her, the main character in 8. But we're skipping ahead.
We are skipping ahead.
So part 2 ends in a very confusing way, because as they find Muffin, Paul and Jenny find Muffin, Jason comes through another window.
Yes.
And it seems like he's grabbing her. But we cut to Jenny is in a stretcher, and she's saying, "Where's Paul? Where's Paul?" Even though Paul was nowhere near Jason.
Yeah.
So the screenwriter of part 2 says Paul is dead. But if you listen very closely to part 3, the news broadcasts, there's 8 people that are dead. And if Paul would have died, that would have meant 9 people. So we don't know if Paul's alive or not. We never saw it.
It's like the Beatles.
But so, yeah, 2 is just kind of weird in how that ends, but it transitions very well into 3, because part 3 takes place the day after.
Yes, it's the
Saturday the 14th.
The late, mm-hmm. Saturday the 14th.
Where Jeffrey, oh God, kid.
It's 4 is Sunday the 15th, right?
Yeah.
Sunday or Monday. It's like another just a couple days later. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this. It opens with the curler lady, the owner of the Flop House Motel.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
She's complaining about her husband.
That's eating all the groceries in the other area. Like
He's just taking cheese noodles out of things. He's got a rabbit sitting in the produce of his shop. It's like, health department. Hello. You
know? There's no health department, Crystal Lake. I mean, when people are dying.
Yes. I mean, and you know, the every 10 minutes. you know, they're sticking something in your face. You know, like, I mean, the very first shot is he's coming through the laundry and he takes the pole holding the laundry up and sticks it in your face.
Yeah. For those who don't know, which I don't know how anyone missed this, but Friday the 13th Part 3 was one of the
3D movies.
Yeah, it was one of the movies that was made in the 80s in that short time period where you could do it. They made a Friday the 13th in 3D.
Yeah, and there's an artifact that I noticed from that. If you look at the compositions, you see the out of focus backgrounds when they use shallow focus. Mm-hmm. There's a vignetting effect by trying to combine the two, you know, left and right stereoscopic images. So there's kind of a blurred kind of a rainbow, sort of like it looks like a bad vignette.
Really? Yeah, because they were trying to. Yeah. Wasn't it because it was you were watching it? You were going to have to watch it in the red and blue glasses.
Yes, and so there's a bit of a vignette in the background that looks like they used the wrong lens, you know, which they did because you were seeing it in 2D and you're supposed to see it in 3D. So really, technically, we are seeing it through the wrong lens.
Yeah.
But even with that though, seeing it in 2D, it still looks pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. It's well shot. It just I find it interesting, the artifact from. You know, 3D. Yeah. It's just one of those things. I get interested by those things.
It looks a lot better than Jaws 3D.
Well, you got the yo-yo, you got the pitchfork, you got everything flying at the screen.
You got the popcorn.
Yeah.
Yep.
Even the spear hitting the
classic. Is that Jason's first kill in the hockey mask?
Yes.
Yes.
If you don't count what's his name? Hurley? Not Hurley.
Shirley.
If you don't count like how he killed Shirley, but.
You know, in 3D, man, it's like that was a real happening barn.
Yeah,
everything happened in that barn, didn't it?
Well, you got the biker gang, you got the teenagers,
and the whole movie. Jason is hanging around in this damn barn, you know, basically, and you see them, you know,
don't go to the barn.
Yeah, the kids walking around the main compound.
Yeah,
and he's staring at them from out the window of the barn. You could stay away from my hay.
You know? Well, I think it's interesting. Most of the time, the camp looks like, you know, a lake. But I think in the third one, it looks more like a farm almost.
Yes.
I mean, you still got
this,
the lake in it.
This camp is a farm.
Right. And the first two, they actually shot in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And the third and the fourth, they shot in California. So.
Well, that makes
sense. Yeah, because I think there was a California tax incentive at the time that
Pardon?
I think there was a California tax incentive.
Ah, yeah. It's just probably. They actually shot the first two in New Jersey where you know, it's supposed to be, and then the third and the fourth are shot in California, which is, you know, that the New Jersey desert. It must be right next to the Piney Barrens. You know, it's the Piney Barrens desert.
Well, you know, it's supposed to be the same camp all those times. It's different every time. It's crazy.
Yep.
Yeah. So, part three also has a weird ending too. I forgot to mention in our part two discussion, part two had the alternate ending of Mrs. Voorhees' eyes opening up at the end.
Yeah, they cut that out.
They cut that out because they thought it was too stupid, which is completely true.
Yes, but, you know, it's the payoff. I mean, it's completely stupid, but I was sitting there going, oh, she didn't open her eyes. You know, I felt kind of deflated when they didn't do it, you know?
Yeah, and it's a shot that doesn't even be in the movie anyway.
Yeah.
So the final scene in part three where I can't remember the girl's name, but anyway, she fights off Jason, she hangs him, she sticks an axe in his head. That's where he gets
the
marking in his mask. And after all this, you know, she gets back on the fucking boat and or the little like canoe, and she floats in, and then she sees Jason
busting through,
and she's, you know, and he's like Toxic Avenger, like, and she's panicking, and then Mrs. Voorhees comes out, grabs her, kind of like the ending of part one.
Yeah, the inverse of the part one, yes.
But it was all a dream sequence
again.
But most people don't realize the original ending of part three was actually no one was supposed to live after part three. Jason was going to come out of the barn with his mask off and just chop her head off, that character's head off. And that was going to be the end of part three. Final act. And I don't know if that original ending has been released, but there's still photos where you can check online to see, like.
That would be the ending that I would, if I were the director, I'd go for, you know. Everybody dies.
Especially if it was in 3D, you can see
the more deaths, the better in this franchise.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And but nope, we end with a dream sequence with the crazy girl like, and the stretcher.
Again, the crazy girl going off to the loony bin. You know?
Yeah, but I will give four this. Because they end exactly, or they begin exactly where the third one ended. And they pick up the body and put it in the stretcher at night.
They just show all the cop cars splitting from the farm.
And it just going, and it gets quiet, and it's just eerie. It's like they clean up all the bloodbath, and now it's ready for the new blood.
Yep.
That's eerie. That's creepy. Yeah. It's
just a static crane shot. It's this overhead shot of all these cop cars just leaving, you know.
And it's just quiet crickets.
Yeah, quiet. Yes, that was an effective shot. I like that one.
Yeah, and then four opens with the creepy morgue guy who is trying to sleep with someone on top of the Jason's nurse. Corpse.
And of course, Jason's body grabs her leg or whatever it was.
Which is like, dude, just zip that body bag up. He's not, like, ridiculously big. Not yet. And
why don't we just make out in the locker room or something?
I find that weird. Why would you make out in front of a bunch of corpses? That doesn't seem to be
a fetish for every season. Movie. I guess yes, a fetish for every season.
Okay, cool. So this one was directed by Joseph Zito, who was a trademark of the 80s. Did Chuck Norris movies, Cannon movies.
Who
faded out after the 80s. Yeah,
and who apparently Corey Feldman hated.
Yeah, Corey Feldman. Well, everyone hated him because the production. Joseph Zito was a very harsh filmmaker, apparently, during the making of it. Because you have to keep in mind, audience, they shot this in the winter or like fall, like from October to December.
Yeah, it was like October to January.
And they were shooting this in the cold. And the scene where the girl has to go out skinny dipping to this, like, raft.
Yep.
She did not have a, what we would call, like, a warm blanket or a,
thermal blanket. Or any of the gel like covering or nothing, no. And he kept making her do it. And I heard that, T.C. White, or whatever his name is, the stuntman that was playing Jason?
Yeah, he went on strike.
I'm going to fucking walk off this set if you don't let her out of the fucking lake.
And also that same actor complained about, Corey Feldman being a brat, but that's also, you have to keep in mind.
Corey Feldman is a brat.
Well, you have to keep in mind, Corey Feldman was a very angry person. Even Will Wheaton from the set of Stand By Me was very much like, he was the angriest of all of us, and probably for good reason.
Will Wheaton?
Yeah.
Mr. Crusher?
Yeah, that guy.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. I'm going to die now.
But, yeah, so it was not the happiest production ever.
Yeah.
But anyway, but part four, however, has the most effective kills, even though that, too, also got chopped from the NBA.
They add the dynamic. Instead of just the cabin full of teenagers, they have this, sweet little family.
Yeah.
And the Golden Retriever.
Yeah.
Again, maybe the best actor in the film.
Yeah.
Better than
Crispin Glover.
No. You're right. I was going to say, Crispin Glover with his weird chicken dances.
Yeah. The weird robotic, out-of-control dance.
The deaths are up on this movie because you got Savini back.
Yep.
Yeah, Savini came back because he was informed that this was going to be the last movie, even though it wasn't.
You mean the final chapter is not the last Friday the 13th movie?
No, actually. We'll get to the new beginning in a little bit, but
I don't like the new beginning.
Yeah, it's not. No one did. But yeah, Friday the 13th Part 4 is a weird... Well, it's not a weird movie. It's
darker.
Darker.
The fleshed out family, the divorced mom, the
very Spielberg-esque.
The peppy teenager, the guileless, but kind of damaged 12-year-old boy.
He's very fascinated by horror films.
Right. Well, he comes from a broken home, so he's thinking about a broken world, And so you've got a lot more depth to the characters, and these are not like, Oscar-winning characters by any stretch of the imagination. But as far as a Friday the 13th character goes, these are almost real human beings.
And even the characters get developed. Like, that's the weird part.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That we actually get to learn something about these people.
Well, that's because it's the beginning of the Tommy Jarvis trilogy.
Yeah.
Sort of. But, well, it's a beginning, but it's a not an unintentional beginning.
It's well, it's still beginning.
We retconned it, so it has been declared.
I mean, but that's the charm of the Friday the 13th series, is everything's so half-assed, and there's this huge lore around it.
Yeah, because I mean, there's so many holes in the story that like the fans are trying to plug with square pegs.
I think that's what people like about the series in general. It's just
there's so much you can imagine on your own. You can make up your own shit, like. Like we came up with our own the muffin cloning factory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and well, the thing is about part four is also we have to keep in mind this was the movie where basically Tommy goes insane, and it's a start of, and the weird part about the ending is it's promoted as the final chapter, but it still has that.
And they imply
implied ending that there'll be more.
Yeah, and they imply that Tommy's going to become Jason.
Yeah, and something they will do in part five. So, are we done? Are we okay with talking about Friday the 13th, part four, or really the first four movies?
I want to say that the zombie Jason at the end of part four is awesome. That is one of the best parts.
It is a really good, and you're talking about the ending, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a really good makeup effects trick to have the head just basically on like the machete is a pike and it's just like just dissolving out. Like it's a great effect.
I think it's interesting when you just 1 through 4, how much the series evolved.
Right.
From just part 1 through 4. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating.
The way the world expanded, you know.
Yeah.
And stuff.
Well, it's crazy. It's the formula is. So it's the same, but how much it changed.
Right.
Essentially the same story every single time.
Yeah. I say for the first four films, you know, my favorite is still, you know, the image from the end of part one, you know, the lake, the music, the foliage. That's for me the takeaway from the first four, you know, that image for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really interesting start. Like I said, I love 2, and I think that's where things...
Right.
You pretty much could cut the first one out and just start with 2.
Yeah. And 3 is where you actually get the real Jason.
No, yeah.
Yeah, and even that scene is... even as I was watching it, it's complete... I was like, yeah, I understand why this became iconic. Well, why this mask...
You could start with 2, or you could start with 5, The New Beginning.
I think we'll start the next podcast with that... So with that said, we're going to come back next week and for part 2, and we're going to talk about 5 through 8. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find me at MovieKale on Twitter, and you can also find me at The Youth Critic, and then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHT Network. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you next week for part 2.